Welcome to Gospel Tangents. I'm your host, Rick Bennett. Please consider donating or purchasing a transcript by going to our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. You'll help support other documentaries and podcasts such as this. Dr. Darren Smith has written a book about how race, religion, and sport collide at BYU and other institutions. BYU is known to have a large number of students of Polynesian descent, and recently hired the first Tongan coach in America, Kalani Sitake. We'll talk about how Darren Smith feels about this hiring, as well as how minorities in general fare at BYU. Let's listen in on our conversation. Tell us about your book. What's the name of your book, and tell us what it's about.
It's called When Race, Religion, and Sport Collide, Black Athletes at BYU and Beyond. It was published by Roman and Littlefield in 2016, toward the end of the year, so around November-ish. So published first on hardback, then later came out on paperback, so that's a testament to how well it's doing. So I'm really glad to see, because most books like this don't really do well, but sports books actually, there's a market for sports books. So viewers, if you're listening to us, there is a market for sports books, particularly when you mix it with religion, which is a very interesting mix, which is what the book is really about. I'm trying to talk about, and as you mentioned earlier, Rick, you know, I'm trying to look at sports as an industrial complex, the thorny topic of race, and how religion sort of underscores it all. And I'm using BYU as a lens because I worked there for several years, and I saw and met and just was witness to several incidences, high profile incidences, where athletes came in and they were there for a short time and they were out. And generally, when they left, it was too much fanfare and media attention, public scrutiny, if you will. And I noticed a pattern of just those young men who seem to have their business trotted out in the public versus other athletes who you never hear anything about. So that really got me thinking about it. And then, of course, the Brandon Davies thing happened in 2011. You probably remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And that really tipped the scale for me. I was like, there's a story here. You know, and so then I was worked with a gentleman named Luke O'Brien, who was working for a media outlet called Deadspin in 2011. And so he and I collaborated on an article about this phenomenon of high-profile athletes being kicked out of BYU. And that led to the book, When Race, Religion, and Sport Collide. So I did a much more expansive look at that. So,
yeah, so I bought it last month. I read the whole thing. It's a great book. So I really encourage everyone to check it out. So one of the things, you know, we live here in Utah. We're just down the road, literally, from BYU right now, mm-hmm. here in Orem. And so I wanted to talk a little bit, because I think a lot of listeners probably think that a lot of black athletes are held up as role models and that sort of thing. One of the things in your book, you said that blacks were kicked out at a higher rate than white students. So I kind of have a statistics background. So give us some of the statistics about that kind of support that idea.
Yeah, well, the accounts of high terminations were looked at based on public media accounts with public media outlets and their stories that they covered, police record reports, court records. So went back and tried over a 20-year period to find all of that data to verify the findings. And so when I looked at my data that I found for that time period based upon the athletes that were kicked out, the two matched. I mean, you know, so it was just a simple tally. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a whole lot of fancy mathematics. It was just a simple tally. You look at the look at what you have, look at what's you have, and you, okay, they overlay. So, you know, I mean, you know, tally can be as scientific as anything. So I mean, this is not fake news or alternative truth. This is the information that's contained in the book is based on public record. So I tried to find and verify all of the data. And if I couldn't verify it in the literature, I would actually interview the athlete to get their particular side of it. So it was a mixed methods book, if you will, but it's more of a simple tally.
Yeah. So let's talk about what percent of students are, and I don't know if we should go with just black or all racial minorities, if you want to lump those together, compared to white students at BYU.
As of the fall of 2013, BYU reported 4,139 students of color on campus. Underrepresented minority students as a whole just made up 14% of the student body. Most of them were Asian Pacific Islanders. Okay, that shouldn't surprise anybody. That's why BYU made the decision to go with the coach that they have now. because they're catering to this pot, which they should.
Ikalani Shiitake, you're talking about.
They should. That was a great decision. So I would celebrate that decision, and I think they'll have a better result because of the coach that they have. So I hope this coach is not a puppet, though. This coach has his own mind. He can think, but that's a good decision. So I celebrate that decision.
So let me just mention one thing. So there's a current BYU coach. I'll keep this a little bit vague, but I'm sure if you're a sports fan, you can figure out who I'm talking about. Yeah. But he used to coach at the University of Utah. I had a conversation with him, and I remember specifically he pointed at a black athlete, and he said, you know, we really recruited that athlete well. We brought the parents out and let them see the campus. He said, when I was at the University of Utah, it was much easier to recruit black athletes at Utah than it is at BYU. And I was surprised, number one, that he was so open about that, but number two, he just talked about how much harder it is to recruit the black athlete at BYU. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think, I mean, as I say in the book, Rick, I mean, it's the culture of Provo. It's just Provo, it's the bubble, it's the consciousness of Mormons in this community, it's the lack of knowing, lack of knowledge of black people, even still, even in 2017. It's the isolation here, the sense of isolation. You have to really, to fit in here, you have to have if you're non-Mormon and you're black and you're Mormon, fitting in is another story in and of itself. But if you're not black and non-Mormon, it's very hard here. I mean, there's nothing to do here, really. There's no, you know, things for young people to do other than, you think, well, this is a college campus. Well, yeah, but in terms of in the community itself, there's nothing really, everything revolves around BYU. So either you participate at BYU or you don't. And most football players hang together. They hang together because they're isolated. The athletic department, just the nature of the athletic department, isolates student athletes. They just isolate it. And you can really see that with BYU. And again, other schools, you have the same complaint with students of color who go to predominantly white schools. This is a phenomenon that's across PWIs, not just BYU, but it's across campuses, predominantly white campuses. It's hard, man, very hard. And students don't do well, you know, because they're dealing with, you know, remember, these are young people who are coming from communities that none of us have any, well, I do, most white people have no clue about the difficulties of living in urban America, right? They have no idea. And you're traumatized, man. There's traumas there. So, but at any rate, so I'm speaking mostly about young men of color, young African-American men of color, and what they go through. So yeah, crisis management should be available, which is why I find the BYU situation so incredulous, man. When they have the means, they know what they're supposed to do. At least rhetorically, they know.
So you're saying they should be more pastoral?
Absolutely. And I argued that in the last chapter. Here's an opportunity to really, really change. And they've done that they've done it through osmosis. And I say that in the sense, I'm not saying that young men have to convert to Mormonism, but there have been some young men who have converted to Mormonism since they were here. I can think of a handful.
Ty Detmer.
I'm thinking Kalen Hall. I'm thinking black players in particular. Who else? Jamal Willis and Wilson, or what's his name?
Willis,
him. There are several of them, and when I look at them and look at where they are, they're doing extremely well, man. You know, so I don't know if that's the church or if it's the chicken or the egg, but they do great. So why not harness that same energy with non-Mormon players?
Right. No, I think that's great.
You know, another thing. Here, and this BYU, if you're listening to me, please hear me on this one. You have the Marriott School of Business here, one of the best business schools in the country. Why not have a career day for these athletes? The ones that you know may not finish their degree. Maybe you get them taught, or may not go to the league. They need a job. Why not use your resources at the Marriott School to imbue these young men with a potential job? I mean, the church is well-connected business in terms of its business connections. So much more can be done for these young men who need that kind of help. And this is not also a slam on the church. I want to be clear about that, too. I'm not hating on the church. I want to make sure that people know that This is a scholarly exercise for me. I happen to be a member of the church. This is very interesting to me to want to know, you know, how we treat other people who are not of our faith, who are not the same religion, who are not the same race, and have the same background, class-oriented background, because most of these young men come from urban America. They come from inner-city communities where most of them, at least the ones that I interviewed for this particular book and then the article that Luke and I did, come from broken homes. Very few of these men had fathers in their midst, or they had mothers who were working very hard to make sure they had an opportunity. And so they were, you know, like most parents, most black parents across the country, who want their children to have a better opportunity than they had. If they have skills that they can harness for that, such as their athletic ability, then BYU has a good reputation as being a Christian institution. Why not go there? You know, so, and the young men, you know, when they come here, to BYU's credit, I think they, people here are nice, man. I mean, I'm in Utah, viewers, if you don't realize that. I think Rick mentioned we're in Orem, so we're in Utah, but people here are nice. I mean, when I lived here for many years, I mean, one of the things I can say is that, Utah is you'll find some of the nicest racists you'll ever see in the country right here in Utah. Very nice people. Who don't, at least when I was here, never came up to me or called me out my name or, you know, made me feel, you know, less than here. And I think it's just the isolation of being black in a white environment where there's very little cultural things that you like, people who look like you, vibe like you, have the same sort of ideas and about life and the world as you do. So that was sort of my, one of the reasons why I left.
I hope you enjoyed our discussion with Dr. Darren Smith. Our next conversation is one of my favorites. We'll talk about BYU's attempts to get into the Big 12 conference. It's a much better conference, and BYU will make a lot more money if they can get into the conference. However, some schools, such as Iowa State, are opposed to BYU joining the Big 12 due to its stance on gays. It's not the first time BYU has been the subject of protests.
Does it seem hypocritical of Stanford accusing BYU of racism?
Very hypocritical. Very hypocritical. But it goes to show you where our level of thinking around these issues of race and indifference were during that time frame. The focus was on African Americans, right? That was the focus. Pull the beam out of your own eye before you turn the gaze on others.
Click here to subscribe, click here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some other videos that we've done here on YouTube. We hope you'll use this as a valuable resource to learn more about Mormon history.